Welcome to the Future of News with Avid. If you couldn't make it, this podcast aims to provide just a taste of the insight delegates received from some of the leading figures in the news arena and an idea of what to expect from future broadcast events with a news focus. We'll hear how Ofcom's Peter Phillips and Steve Perkins fielded questions on their session and some delegate perspectives on the day. But first, our keynote speaker, Helen Bowden, head of news at the BBC, lets us know what keeps her awake at night.
Well, it's not the obvious concerns like the new licence fee. You will have noticed that our language on the licence fee has changed. Where once we called it disappointing, now we use that all-purpose management euphemism, challenging. And in that shift, we reveal the journey we've been on from dismay to disappointment to a new sense of realism. As Mark Thompson said on Monday, our much tighter funding, along with the government's proposed 3% efficiencies per year over the next 5 years, requires a change of size and a change of attitude. The BBC of the future will still pack a powerful punch, but it will definitely be smaller. For news, and probably for all of journalism, it's likely to be an uncomfortable and difficult time over the next 5 years as we adjust to a thriftier world. The BBC will always protect its journalism, but no one is immune from the pressure for efficiencies. So right now, we're working hard on ideas which we hope will meet the efficiency targets. I can't talk in any kind of detail about those proposals because they need approval from the BBC Trust before we can implement them. But we expect the Trust to give their judgment in the autumn. But I can talk a bit about the general lie of the land, and I don't relish another round of job losses after 3 years of value for money cuts. No one in BBC management does. But I am a realist about the situation we're in. I think I can confidently predict that within 5 years, and with undoubtedly some pain, BBC News will be somewhat smaller, even more efficient, and as Mark Thompson has outlined, packing a punch in the multimedia world. So what other real issues are we fretting about? Well, there have been suggestions that our precious licence fee should be top-sliced. Clearly, if that proposal is serious, there's an argument to be had. But that's not my biggest concern. Nor is the new regulatory framework we are learning to enjoy at the BBC. No one could dispute that the new BBC Trust is keeping us on our toes and demanding a greater accountability and transparency from BBC management. But since those are things that our journalism often points out are missing from other organisations, it's not unreasonable that the BBC should have to demonstrate them. And even the growth of new and daunting competition isn't my top worry, though it comes quite close. And by competition, I don't just mean the tried and true competitors whom we love to beat, but hold in real regard, like ITN, Sky and CNN. It's also the new boys on the block. I worry, and I think all of us should worry, that a recent survey of the most trusted news providers in the world showed the BBC was top, followed by CNN, but it was Google, which doesn't actually provide any of its own news, but aggregates everyone else's, that those surveyed decided was their third most trusted news provider. If any of us had been asked 10 years ago about a survey like that, I don't think any of us would have put Google in such a strong position. So what is my top worry for BBC News if these aren't enough? Well, it's really about the relationship to the people who matter most, our audiences. It's about capturing and keeping their hearts and minds. The one thing we need to guard against more than any other is the possibility that BBC News could become a heritage brand, living on past glories and brand values, but increasingly irrelevant to a significant part of the audience. So we know that people think news is important, but there's a gap between what people say and what they do. Now that may sound daft when at the moment the BBC reaches 80% of the adult population with our news on television, radio or online. But the picture is a lot more complicated than that. You can see that in digital homes, reach to news falls, not by as much as it might have done. I actually think it's very interesting how news has actually held up against overwhelming competition. Current affairs audiences, and this isn't just BBC current affairs, this is across the piece, have gone through the floor, really. I mean, current affairs is having a very, very tough time, which is one of the reasons we've strategically placed Panorama in a different slot. Fascinatingly, soaps, there's been very little fall off, which I think, for if you're interested in news, there's something about narrative and telling a powerful story that we need to bear in mind. But even our 80% reach figure, which we're very proud of, is actually slightly more complicated than you may think. That actually, the key thing is, television news is declining in popularity. Radio news, remarkably resilient radio, goes really at a point where you might argue it should be going downhill. It's still amazingly resilient, and I'm sure that's partly because of the simple convenience of the radio set. And BBC News Online, a terrific success story, or consumption of BBC Online going up 100% year on year, but actually relative to those numbers that watch television, not making up the gap in our reach. With particular audiences, it's clear that like other broadcasters, we're struggling. It's not a disaster story. We know that 70% of 16 to 24-year-olds are connected to BBC News in some way every week. But the ways they are getting their news are definitely changing, and I think this is, for me, the most interesting side. This is about young audiences to television news. And when I first saw it, I was really surprised, because when you get big stories like the July bombings and the Suffolk murders, because they're big events where everyone's gripped, I mean, it's hard to remember now how we were all gripped by the Suffolk murders, you know, the finding of bodies, the police investigation, etc., etc. You would have just thought, common sense would have told you, that every audience group, whatever their age, would have turned on the telly to find out what was going on. Well, actually, it's clearly not true. That 16 to 34-year-olds did not turn on the telly in great numbers. There was a little bit of a spike, but they clearly were getting their news from other places. Fewer than 25% of 15 to 24-year-olds watch 15 consecutive minutes of BBC News on television in any given week, and I bet that's the same for all the other broadcasters. I don't think we're unique in this. Now, the reason I'm talking about the young is not because I'm obsessed with youth. The BBC has had some very odd fashions where youth seem to be the only part of the audience that mattered. You have to remember, I used to run Radio 4, so I know the value of the so-called older demographic. And I also recognise, and I don't think enough media people do, that we are an ageing population, and actually we ignore that trend at our peril, as much as ignoring the youth. But frankly, if BBC News is not to slip silently and gently into a service for the saga generation, it needs to connect deeply with the interests and habits of the young, whilst being confident enough not to be simply led by them. We actually call the young, my other audiences groups, a vulnerable audience group, and I sometimes think it's a wonderful misnomer, because of course it's not them that are vulnerable, it's us. In our search to find new ways to connect to this vital audience, we're very lucky to have a fantastic model in Newsbeat on Radio 1. And it's often Newsbeat listeners who alert us to important stories with wider implications. It was actually Newsbeat listeners who told us about the army equipment failures in Iraq that became a very big national story for everybody. Why did they tell us? Well, think about the demographic for Newsbeat. It's because many of the people who listen to Newsbeat are either squaddies or no squaddies or are related to people currently in the army, their friends and their families. And it was fantastic for us that they trust Newsbeat enough to tell us their stories for us to do something with. But of course, we need much more than Newsbeat. And in recognition of that fact, we've recently completed a major piece of work which we've called Creative Futures. You'll have seen and read both Mark Thompson and Mark Byford, the head of BBC Journalism, talking about it. What that revealed was that while many of the young may rate the BBC, we can't assume, as we did with their parents, that at a certain point they will simply migrate to being BBC News consumers. They're growing up with far more choice in terms of their news providers, and we may not be their default news provider as they grow older in the way we have been for previous generations. But we have to be careful here. Their reluctance to vote and their apparent political apathy doesn't mean they're not interested in what's going on around them. Our research suggests they feel passionately about all sorts of issues, but they expect them to get their news in ways that work for them. So how are you planning to woo this generation of consumers used to things like Facebook and YouTube into BBC News? Well, we're not pretending it's easy, but we are working on several fronts. The heart of our approach is the strategy you need with any audience. You start where they are and not where you'd like them to be. So we know that the penetration of broadband is higher among audiences which currently consume less journalism, the young and those in digital television homes. While 16 to 24s are watching less TV than their counterparts in previous decades, they spend three times as long using new media as the over 25s. So you'll be very unsurprised that our major focus for reaching the young is interactivity via the web and mobility. We have plans, still to be approved by the Trust, to build on our prize-winning website to create a service we're provisionally calling My News Now. This will be a service which allows highly sophisticated personalisation. So whatever your age or your interests, you can get the subjects and the styles of news which you find attractive when you want them, for the present moment or to download for later. There'll be audio and video on demand and aggregated pages on a huge number of specialisms. This should also be a service which offers you incredibly detailed information and news on your local area, because one of the things we're increasingly becoming aware of is just how local people like localness to be. You know, most of us have worked in regional terms or national terms, and actually, just as someone in the States once said, all politics is local. For lots of people, all news is local, or the news they're really interested in. And of course, all of this stuff, be it, should it be approved by the Trust, will be available as a mobile service as long as we do it with sensitivity to those already in the marketplace. Our user-generated hub, which is a rather pompous description of the desk that takes in the texts, emails, stills and video which our audiences send us, has been expanded and expanded, but is still struggling to keep up with the huge amount of material that our audiences send us. The 7th of July London bombings famously demonstrated that there are hundreds of news gatherers out there who can collect images that we simply can't. That kind of relationship we see is now so important that we're opening our UGC hub for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, very soon. Let me be quite clear. If the BBC ever simply followed audience taste in an unthinking way, we should hand back the licence fee. We're not a market-led organisation. We get the privilege of the licence fee to give people more than they expect. So if you ever think of me lying awake at night fretting about the future of BBC News, and I don't expect you to, remember that what I am really worrying about is the most fundamental and important question of all. How we keep the engagement and interest, and above all, the trust of all our audiences now and in the future.
The public's trust in TV news has dropped dramatically since 2002, according to new research from Ofcom. Ofcom's New News, Future News asked people which sources of news they felt provided impartial coverage. The responses showed levels of trust were down by more than a quarter for all of the terrestrial channels. We opened up the floor for questions.
Fran O'Brien, BBC Trust, formerly of Ofcom. You've talked about the possibility that in the future regulation might change, impartiality will be removed but left with the major PSBs. Can we talk a bit about funding of PSBs? We heard from Martin Fuel of Channel 4 earlier on, and you've talked again about Channel 4 now, and it's very particular delivery and it gets hard to get audiences. It's Muslim audiences trust it, it gets younger audiences, it gets minority ethnic audiences. It's delivering something special in terms of PSB provision. One of the reasons it probably does that is not only because of Channel 4's very distinct remit, but because it also is after an advertising audience which is upmarket, which is young, which has money to spend. So it's a kind of little magic circle. Channel 4 News delivers those audiences, and it gets hard to reach audiences, and it delivers duly impartial news to those audiences. It does something special. Does something actually the other broadcasters here all want to do and possibly don't do to the same extent? Moving forward, if we're going to deliver a variety of duly impartial philosophies, because that's what they all are, Do you need diversity of funding behind the PSB? Or are we going to move, in your view, inevitably to one source of funding, license fee, TOPS licensing, and that's how you fund PSB, which I would suggest will mean to a less diverse, duly impartial news?
Clearly, that's the central question for our Public Service Broadcasting Review, which is going to kick off in the autumn. And the question about the future funding of public service broadcasting is going to be very difficult. The work which we did, that we published only a couple of months ago on Channel 4, showed the scale of the kind of financial challenges which Channel 4 may face in the future. And many of those challenges may also apply to other commercial broadcasters as well. I think we can see that for the provision of network news on mainstream channels, that there looks as if there's an enduring commercial rationale for doing that. And the fact that in the US, for example, we've seen channels that have no public service obligations on them, the main networks, preserve the position of nightly news as a central part of their schedule, I think says quite a lot about what the prospects might be for that post-switchover. But I think in terms of the broader questions, there are a number of different models. But I think the central point that we've made since the first Public Service Broadcasting Review is that the models in the past are breaking down inexorably, and that the value that broadcasters have had from gifted analogue spectrum in the past, which has enabled them to take on their public service obligations, that's going to be worth a lot less in the future. It won't be worth nothing, and there may still be an element which it's worth them continuing to do some public service things because they get benefits, whether it's in terms of privileged access to some digital spectrum, whether it's about EPG positioning, whether it's about must-carry rules or all of those kinds of things. But I think at this stage, we need to think about a wide range of possibilities, not just about the licence fee, but about a whole range of possible ways in which those kinds of things can be funded.
Chaz, ITV news correspondent. One quick question. Obviously, you're talking about engaging with people from the BME community and with Muslim communities. How do you think the row with Channel 4 and the Big Brother thing is actually going to make links with those communities?
It's a complex thing, isn't it? Because Fran just mentioned quite rightly, and it surfaced in Peter's slides, that this research obviously was done before Big Brother, but Channel 4 does seem, notwithstanding, to have a better relationship with those communities than some of the others. What happened with Big Brother? Pretty robust finding from Ofcom, transmitted three times. The channel has recognised the problems with that. I would like to think that we can move on from that. But is that your take, or do you feel yourself that there's ongoing problems?
Well, I'm not going to speak from all the communities and, you know, all BME groups, but, you know, in which kind of circumstances are you going to try and convince those groups that you're actually working with them rather than against them?
It's a tough one. We've put it out to views from everybody, yourself today and everybody here. We put it back, we have to, I think, to the broadcasters and other content providers. There's not necessarily a lot we can do from Ofcom, but it is, we have surfaced it as one of the three absolutely key areas for debate and policy coming out of this study.
I think the issues for Channel 4 are a much bigger set about the challenges for the channel as it moves into the digital age, rather than those kinds of perception areas where the research at least suggests that there is a very strong bond amongst a number of minority ethnic groups with what Channel 4 is and its perception.
I suppose at the heart of that question is a sense of, is the news seen as separate from the channel? And is your study saying that separation does exist or that it doesn't? I mean, the other message that's coming out from your report is that news carries a branding advantage for channels. That's what you're arguing about commercial interest is.
That's absolutely true. But I think one of the themes that comes through from all of our research is actually that audiences are pretty sophisticated and they have much greater understanding about those things. I think, you know, their view of the comments that were made to Shilpa Shetty and their view of what Jon Snow says, I think that there's a sense in which they understand the difference between those things.
Simon Bucks from Sky News. With the proliferation of internet television, how much longer can Ofcom realistically expect to be able to regulate television?
I think clearly one of the things that is highly relevant to that is that, as you'll all know, there's a new directive on audiovisual media services coming out of Brussels, which is going to extend the realm of regulation to services on the internet which are TV-like in their content. And so I think that that's moving the boundary the other way rather than the way in which you're suggesting. But I think the position right now is that, as I showed in the figures, that the use of video content over the internet for news is a very much a minority sport. Even amongst people who use the internet for their news, it's less than one in five of them are viewing video clips right now.
You know, A, it's early days, and B, the nature of the internet is such that even if you were able to regulate the internet television by virtue of a Brussels directive, the actual practicalities of doing so are going to be really difficult, aren't they?
I think one of the things that I mentioned was the fact that in the future you're going to have different content under different regulatory regimes coming to the same device. That clearly sets up a whole load of tensions and questions about the way in which that's sustainable, how understandable that is from an audience perspective, and so on. And I think there are clearly some big long-term questions about all of that that we'll want to consider. But I think that as far as services which are close to TV in their nature is concerned, I think that the regulation is moving the opposite way from the way that you suggest.
Hi, Ramsey Fraser, CNN. Looking at some of the charts you showed earlier, it looks as though there is a lack of belief in the impartiality of the news world, and at the same time, you've cited that disengagement among the youth is growing. How is decreasing the impartiality actually going to increase the amount of engagement?
Let me make one thing clear, which is that we're not saying that that is definitely a solution or even a solution to that problem. I think that what we're saying, though, is that one of the things which audiences are saying to us is that the range of voices that they hear is one of the things that they don't like, particularly amongst those groups which have issues about disengagement. So the young are saying to us that there's an insufficient range of people and voices being represented. Clearly, within the current regulation, it's possible to have a wide range of people. But within the constraints of a tight news bulletin, then being able to get on a wide range of people when you feel you have to have political balance of a Labour voice and a Conservative voice and maybe a Lib Dem voice already, means that practically, even though it's not directly a consequence of the regulation, that's quite difficult to do. And it's possible that relaxing that kind of regulation may help. It may not, and that's why it's something we want to invite comment and debate on, rather than something we're saying this is definitely the answer.
Hi, I'm David Wood from Broadcast Magazine. I just wondered, I was quite interested in those results, especially the BBC, the level of trust people have in BBC News, down to 54%, which seems to be saying that half of the people who are watching BBC's news don't actually trust it. I just wondered, my understanding is the BBC's own research shows higher levels of trust in its news, and I wondered, for Ofcom, why there would be perhaps this difference between the BBC's own internal research and your research here. And I just wonder whether there's anyone from the BBC in the audience who would take issue with it.
One of the things I mentioned as I was showing that data is that the way you ask questions about trust and impartiality has an impact on the results. The questions, for example, on impartiality that the BBC asks are about views on specific programmes. People give a different answer to that question from the one that they do to saying, what's your perception of impartiality on the channel as a whole? So I think there are good and explicable reasons why one methodology might come out with a different result from the other one. The thing, though, that I was focusing on was less the absolute result, but more the fact that when people were asked the same question 5 years ago, they gave one answer, and when they were asked the same question again now, they gave an answer that was significantly lower. And I think, to my mind, the important issue here is not the absolute level, because, as I say, it does depend on the precise formulation of the question, but more the fact that people's perceptions of channels have moved significantly. I think that it's also worth saying that despite those changes in perception, we haven't seen a surge in complaints about breaches of the code on impartiality. And so what we're seeing here is a sense of people's broad perceptions rather than things that are tied in to specific sets of circumstances. And I think that's important to remember when in thinking about those results.
So what did our delegates have to say?
Well, the most intriguing part, perhaps, is the bit was last. Pete Clifton from BBC talking about how they're going to use more embedded video and a video which is more applicable to the story, not necessarily just, you know, referencing a bit of TV video, but something which is you probably wouldn't get to see on any other TV channel. Citizen journalism, well, it's such a broad term. I mean, it's very difficult to know when people say that, what feelings does it engender? Because it could mean so many different things. I think in the context we've seen it in this morning, well, they say it's not a vox pop, but I don't really see how it's not a vox pop, because there's still the editorial decision made over which ones you're going to choose, which is essentially a vox pop to me. So I'm yet to be convinced by that. Well, I think at future conferences, perhaps next year, or maybe the year after, we're going to probably see more, again, what the BBC touched on here, and that's broadcasters' ability to let go of their video and news content and let it go virally onto other sites. And I think they're very timid about doing it at the moment, and I think there's probably a lot of back-end technical issues to be dealt with. How do you make an advertising book on that? How do you guarantee that it's on sites which, you know, reflect your brand or don't show your brand in a bad light? And I think in probably not next year, but the year after, we'll see more of that, you know, as people are less afraid to let their brand live elsewhere.
I think that the Ofcom presentation was really, really useful. I think, you know, it is a couple of years since we've really had a measure of where we are in the industry. Some of it was good news for people like me, and I see things from initially from my narrow perspective, and some of it's less encouraging. I think that the fact that the quality and the amount of political and international coverage within news has increased on ITV, it's been recognised by Ofcom, and that's fabulous, and that really does show through in our programmes, and make a lot of effort into bringing more international and political news, but to tell it in a very user-friendly way. So that's important to us, that's been noted. But worrying is the gap and the increasing gap between the regional news and the amount that it costs to produce, and one has to wonder going forward what will happen with that. ITV has a very impressive network of regional news operations. They're very important to our viewers, because obviously we also found that more local news, even more local than regional news, is something that viewers are looking for now. So will we be seeing eventually the demise of ITV's regional networks? Will it be reduced? What impact will that have on viewers and on the profile that ITV News has across the country as it connects with local audiences, which feeds through to the national audience as well? I think that we can bring in audiences to our news programmes for intelligent comment, because they want to get involved, and that's a whole different world away from the vox pop of yonder year, where one accosted somebody in the street and would wring 5 seconds out of them, even if they didn't give a damn about what you were asking them for. You just had to get their vox pop before you went back to the office. It meant nothing, it was facile, it was pointless, it was empty. And it's given the participation of real people in news a very bad name. But I would like to start again, wipe the slate clean, and bring in my citizen correspondents who will make an intelligent contribution to our news offering.
I've only been working in the news industry for 8 months. Previously, I worked in mainstream television. I did a very similar job in sort of other areas of broadcast. But for me, it's been very interesting today to understand the issues facing other news broadcasters other than ITN, and sort of seeing how different organisations are approaching the same issues and challenges that we have at ITN. Citizen journalism is something that still needs to be explored, I think, and there's still a lot of issues around it. In particular, things that have been, you know, talked about at length today, like compliance issues and, you know, how you verify and, you know, apply the rigour that we have traditionally applied to, you know, journalism, to content that's far less controllable. But it's an extension of sort of natural extension of the way that sort of the bigger kind of changes in broadcast kind of generally, you know, dawn of reality TV, you know, 10 years ago, you know, this is kind of an extension of the fact that people are now involved in sort of all aspects of media in a way that they, you know, never were previously, and they've kind of embraced technology far quicker than we have. I'm very interested to hear the chap from Al Jazeera talk about the setup of that channel in the last year, because obviously we haven't seen the launch of a new news service for a long time. So I'm particularly interested to see whether they've embraced it, you know, in the sort of traditional kind of model, or whether their starting point has been, you know, much more kind of multi-platform and citizen journalist type approach.
Well, I hope that proved as enlightening as it did for the delegates on the day. Of course, you can keep up with all the latest developments in Broadcast Magazine, including any future events. Which just leaves us to thank our sponsors, Avid, and to say we'll be back soon with our Edinburgh special podcast.